Good evening and welcome to Left, Right and Centre. I'm Vishnu Shom, broadcasting live from Kiev in Ukraine on an important day when Prime Minister Narendra Modi has travelled to Poland. He's going to be over here as well on part two of his visit, a short visit to Ukraine at a time when the focus of the world is very much on this country. Tens of thousands of lives have been lost in the war between Russia and Ukraine. Does Prime Minister Modi have an out-of-the-box solution which could be offered to President Volodymyr Zelensky, which could perhaps bring down the killing over here? I'm at the Maidan Square in the heart of Ukraine, in the heart of Kiev itself. 2 years back when I was reporting from here, there wouldn't have been so many flags, perhaps just a dozen odd flags behind me. But there are thousands of flags behind me, each one commemorating a soldier who has been killed in this battle. And there have been so many. There are pictures of these soldiers as well, photographs behind me. It is a very, very difficult sort of situation in being over here and considering the loss of life that this entire region has incurred. Well, a little while earlier on today, I had a conversation with a soldier who's been rehabilitated, a soldier who was badly injured in the Battle of Bakhmut. That's one of the most intense battles that have been fought in this war since the Second World War. He's paralyzed waist down, but his story is a story of real inspiration. That comes up next, and then our discussion on whether Prime Minister Modi's visit can actually result in something positive in this country. For more than 900 days, the world has seen one of the most horrific wars since the Second World War. 2 years ago, we were here, reporting the aftermath of the Russian invasion. How these people were actually killed? Were they executed? Many executions have been reported over here in Bucha. Are there marks of torture as well? This will also be examined. Evidence of torture, rape, assault and fierce battles, resulting in a Russian defeat north of Kiev. On Thursday, the 24th of February 2022, the Russians had come in with a plan, regime change, in a matter of 3 days. Instead, their logistics lines were destroyed and they ended their offensive on Kiev. But the war shifted elsewhere, ups and downs, stirring Ukrainian successes, followed as quickly by Russian gains. As the war stretched on, the casualty count soared. Tens of thousands of Ukrainians and Russians killed, millions displaced, a future uncertain. The pretty streets of Kiev behind me betray what is actually taking place in this country. When we came in over here this morning by train, there were air raid sirens. Familiar sound over here, something we heard even 2 years back when the war first started out. Just in the last couple of weeks, Ukraine has launched a major incursion into Russia in the Kursk region, that's well to the north of where we are, at a time when Russian forces continue to probe westwards from the Donetsk and Lugansk region. Further south, there's a different kind of fighting that's taking place. Ukrainian forces have been hitting targets in Crimea while their naval drones have been taking out Russian warships. All in all, 900 plus days of this war having started, there are no signs of it coming to an end. In the south, though, Ukrainian seaborne drones have decimated the Russian fleet, pushing them back to harbour. The balance of power in the Black Sea is with Ukraine now. One of the most devastating wars fought in Ukraine was the battle to control the town of Bakhmut, a horrific infantry battle which saw drones, rockets and missiles decimate both sides. Human bodies were putty in the face of the incoming ordnance. Today we met a soldier paralyzed waist down after being at the receiving end of a Grad rocket attack. He's an inspiration for many. At this center in the National University of Ukraine, several soldiers who faced the brunt of the attacks are being rehabilitated. This center has produced countless Olympic champions for this country. For more than the last 2 years, we've seen tens of thousands of soldiers injured in the fight between Russia and Ukraine. Ukrainian soldiers have suffered immensely. They've been involved in some of the heaviest fighting
that we've seen anywhere since the Second World War. Some of them have been paralyzed. We're meeting a very special person, Vadim, with us. Now, Vadim is very special for many reasons. Not only was he injured in Bakhmut, one of the most horrific battles since the Second World War, he's got both of his sons who are also soldiers in the Ukrainian army. Vadim, you were fighting where?
Bakhmut.
Sir, only in Bakhmut or in other areas?
No, in Bakhmut.
Only in that?
Yes, in Bakhmut. Bakhmut.
Kyiv,
but in Bakhmut.
First in Kyiv and then Bakhmut.
Yeah, Bakhmut.
Yes.
The fighting in Bakhmut has been described as some of the most difficult since the Second World War. Can you describe it to us?
Okay. Говори, що битва під Бахмутом була сама жорстока після Другої світової війни. Можете описати її?
Я вам так скажу. Війна – це це. Це пекло, ну, взагалі, всюди. Війна – це пекло. Тому не можна сказати, що Бахмут – це було най там.
Okay.
Це зовсім, так. Війна – це зовсім.
I just have to admit.
Так, де б вона не відбувалася, це зло. І пекло всюди пекло. Тому не можна розділяти, що Бахмут це пекло, а Запоріжжя чи Херсон, що то ні. Війна це зовсім всюди, ну, пекло.
Це всім прикладу?
Так.
Okay, so we should admit that war is like a hell and that it's horrible just everywhere. There is no sense to split Bakhmut from Zaporizhia or anywhere else. So that's just hell everywhere.
How were you hit?
Okay, як вас поранили?
Накрило градом.
Okay, so that was the attack by the art missile.
А, більше інформації?
О, ви знаєте, що ви ще хочете.
Ні, ну як, накрило разом, і ударна хвиля кинула мене, і я вдарився головою в, це як його, в бліндаж, і втратив свідомість.
О, вау, so just the case of injury was like that, so the ground missile hit him, and then there was this air wave which blew him away on the wall, right, and as a result, he just fainted because he hit his head, right?
As you don't have control over your legs anymore, right?
Okay, чи ви більше не можете контролювати свої ноги, так?
Ну, на жаль, так.
Unfortunately.
Так, на жаль. Ну, 50% лікарів кажуть,
шанси є.
Шанси є, так. Я собі 100% кажу, що шанси є. Тому я працюю для того, щоб піти, і це, якщо за мене це ніхто не зробить, якщо я не буду працювати над собою, то я дійсно не піду, якщо я лягу і буду, ну, лежати. Тому ми власним приводом для цього це все робимо, для того, щоб показати, що це не втрата життя, це інший, ну, інший етап життя, котрим треба, ну, як змиритися і рухатись вперед. Це не є приговор. Це, так, yes. Тому це...
Well, actually, the doctors say it's 50-50 chance that he will get back.
I'm sure you
will. But actually, Vadim is sure 100%, and for this reason, he is doing his best, right? So he says that the new stage of his life, not just, you know, like something that cannot be changed. And with this example, he shows to other soldiers, right, that things can be done for better, right? So he's quite optimistic here.
Oh my God. You're smiling and you're positive. How important is mental strength for a soldier in your situation?
Наскільки важливо ментальне сила здоров'я для солдата в вашій ситуації?
На 100%.
So 100%
important. Так, 100%. Чому? Тому що першим здається не тіло, а розум. Якщо розум здається, то тіло працювати не буде. Тому 100% треба, ну...
Yeah.
So, well, so the first which defeats is the brain, is your mind, right? So, well, if your brain and mind doesn't work, nothing works, right? So he believes that optimism is the key to success.
Our young soldiers who have also been injured, inspired by him?
Okay. А чи молоді солдати, які також були травмовані, надихаються вами?
Так, так. В мене, щоб ви розуміли, син зі мною пішов 19 років.
Wow.
Він зараз також після нього три тяжкі поранення. В мене два, в нього три тяжкі поранення, і зараз він. І він пішов 19, зараз йому 21.
Oh, wow. Actually, Vadim says that he has his son, who was only 19 when he volunteered to go as a soldier, and he was, like, injured three times, right, so far. But now he's 21, and he's trying to recover, to rehabilitate. We cannot but move forward.
So father and son, yes. Both soldiers.
That's right, and they have one more son who is in service right now, so on the front line. Yes.
Wow. Elsewhere, Ukrainian Armed Forces veterans are being trained in cyber sport. It keeps them occupied at a time when there is so much uncertainty about their futures. Vishnu Shom for NDTV.
Well, joining us now, a very special panel of guests looking at where Ukraine stands at this juncture and whether this visit can actually make a difference. Dr. Mridula Ghosh, Associate Professor at the oldest university in Ukraine, joins me now. Glenn Kull, former Deputy National Intelligence Officer for Transnational Threats, a career CIA officer, joins me from the United States, and former Foreign Secretary Shashank. Thanks very much for being with us. Mridula, let me come to you first. Are you optimistic? Hopeful about the visit of Prime Minister Modi?
Certainly everyone is hopeful, because first I am hopeful because this sets a new level in our relations. Ukraine became independent in 1991 from the Soviet Union. Since then, there hasn't been any Prime Minister's visit here. Only two presidents visited, President Shankardar Sharma in 1993 and then in 2005, President Abdul Kalam. So, from the political standpoint, the level of relationship is definitely going to open a new chapter. That's what is, everyone will say that. Anybody from the point of protocol, from the point of bilateral relations, everything. So, that way, it opens definitely a different chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a new beginning. I wouldn't say good or bad, but it's definitely a turning point.
Sure. Ambassador Shashank, what out of the box... Open up your crystal gazing ball and tell us from all those decades of experience, what is that out-of-the-box solution that the Prime Minister can bring to this country?
Prime Minister Modi, as the leader of India, can say things which many other people may not be able to say. For example, he was able to tell President Putin that this is not the era of war and one should try to find a peaceful diplomatic solution. The same way, he has been able to join the Quad with reference to threats against the Asian countries from China, and especially on India. But at the same time, and China kept saying that India is joining Asian NATO, India said, look, we'll settle our own disputes with China. We don't want to make it into a kind of a multilateral situation. So I'm quite sure that Prime Minister will carry this kind of a message, that you can keep your independence of action, of thought, without necessarily turning into a multilateral joint venture. So I think he would be able to say these things more freely. Secondly, I think since there is a Western perception that Prime Minister Modi, in getting closer to President Putin, they are both becoming very irresponsible leaders, and India is an irresponsible country, Modi is an irresponsible leader. So I think he would be able to correct that impression, which is very, very important from the perspective of the Indian people. So I think he would be doing things for Europe, yeah, if he can carry the message of peace and the Indian perception. And at the same time, he would be able to tell the Indian people that he is able to go for peace and not necessarily just go along with President Putin to help him, encourage him to mount more attacks on Ukraine.
Sure. Ambassador, I just wanted to go across to Glenn Kull. Glenn, it just seems that both Ukraine and Russia continue to have a stomach to fight, and its brinkmanship at this level. Is that your sense as well, that who actually can outlast the other side when it comes to putting soldiers on the battlefield?
I think that is the case right now. In particular, with the incursion or invasion by Ukraine into Russia. I think also pretty clearly President Putin has indicated by his actions, really, more than by his statements, that he has been waiting for the result of the American election in the hope, which I'm sure he's trying to facilitate, that Donald Trump is reelected, in which case he is relatively confident that he could see NATO fractured and American support ended for Ukraine. But that is less probable than it was a month ago. But until the election, neither side has any real interest in even starting significant feelers. With one qualification I'll put on that, I did think that the prisoner exchange between the United States and Russia, which involved a number of other NATO members, European states too, that there was the slightest of hints by Putin that, yes, the war is going on, but negotiation between us, the West and Russia, is possible, yeah. Which indicated to me there was a chance of the beginning of negotiations sometime at the end of the year. But I don't think so now.
Yeah. Mridula, how does this end?
What does it end? Which? The war?
The war.
The war has to end someday, you know. The war will end with peace, definitely. But what kind of peace? That is what the Ukrainians worry about. Will it be a just peace? And, you know, President Zelensky put forward this 10-point plan for the G20 summit in Indonesia, Bali. And after that, it has been the most talked over, you know, thing all over the place, and we have had diplomats, analysts commenting on it. There are several segments of this plan, and the best idea of this plan is that countries can choose the topics they want to choose. The first is nuclear security, food security. The first 5 points of the plan deal with the whole of humanity. When Ukraine puts its own very core interests to the last, you know, like retribution, like territorial integrity and all those issues. And I believe that the international community, together with our Prime Minister Modi, has already said, reiterated time and again, that it is the territorial integrity and sovereignty and the UN Charter will be respected. So taking those mantra, even if we take them, you know, and look at the real politic on the ground, that, you know, there's a stalemate. Now you have the Kurds going in of the Ukrainians, and now you have certain stalemates, certain advances by the Russians. So there is definitely, to quote Mr. Modi, the battlefield is not the solution. Even putting soldiers, it will not end. So therefore, we need to seek a different solution. And what will that definite solution be? That also, of course, you know, I believe that Prime Minister Modi, perhaps with a number of other powers, not him alone, could somehow forge an alliance,
sure,
which could bring to the table a very good analysis of this 10-point plan.
Ambassador Shashank, you know, at one level, this seems to be also an effort at telling countries around the world that you can think what you want about Indian foreign policy, but we'll do what we feel is right. So on the one hand, you've got Modi visiting Moscow. On the other hand, a few weeks later, he's over here in Ukraine, or he will be here shortly. What is there a message in that?
One message has been that lead has been taken by countries like China, Saudi Arabia, South Africa, busy in coming out with solutions of their own from the global south or from the Asian continent about bringing peace in Europe. I think Prime Minister Modi wanted to convey that India is also for peace. India is willing to take a lead, earlier having been the G20 summit venue in Delhi. So I think that was a very successful one. So it's not just the global south that he's representing, but he wants to bring about real peace in Europe. And if more and more countries in Europe feel that American elections might bring about a situation, as we saw in Afghanistan, that there was sudden departure of the Afghan troops, U.S. troops from Afghanistan, we should not see something like this in Ukraine, where the American support is finished totally immediately after the American elections in November. So therefore, what countries like India are trying to say that, well, one must try to find a solution. Of course, there should be a meeting ground from both sides, and the European countries should suggest to Ukraine what will be a doable thing. And then perhaps one can see how Russia and other countries can also go along with that solution. But if in case the feeling is that this is the time to go for the maximum gains of the war, because one side or the other side is gaining momentum, then I think then, of course, it's for the countries themselves to decide what they want to do.
Yeah. Glenn Carl, a final question to you. How closely is Ukraine's fight linked to the Democrats winning the election in the United States?
I think it's quite linked to it, since there's less talk today in the campaign right now in the United States about Donald Trump's associations and links to Russia. But I've spoken in public about them for a decade, and as have many others. And Trump has made clear that if he's elected, that America will become profoundly isolationist and will leave Ukraine in the lurch, and he will welcome whatever Vladimir Putin seeks to do. And I think the discussion about there's a peace effort or this could help balance things by Mr. Modi's visit to Ukraine, I think really misses the point. His visit to Ukraine is to serve Indian interests, and those interests are to counterbalance his visit to Moscow. And in so doing, he might take a little bit of the disfavor that is in the thoughts of Western nations at no cost to him. And talking about how peace is desirable is nice, but that's a little bit like saying, well, okay, there's been a rape, but you just have to sort of accept the fact that the rapist will stay in your bed, and that's okay.
Well, I'd like to thank you all very much for being with us and, you know, offering that perspective ahead of the visit of the Prime Minister to Kiev, a short visit, less than 10 hours, as I understand it. But earlier on today, I did speak to the deputy head of Ukraine's parliament for his views and, you know, the sense that Ukrainians are getting on what might happen with the visit of India's Prime Minister. Listen in.
The visit of Prime Minister Narendra Modi to Ukraine is one that's being watched very closely all across the world, certainly over here in Ukraine. We're joined now by a very special guest. Alexander Kornienko is the first deputy chairperson of the Ukrainian parliament. Thank you very much, sir, for being with us. Are you looking forward to the visit of Prime Minister Modi?
Of course, we wait this very historical visit for our country, and I think not only for our bilateral relationship, but even for all over the world.
Ukraine has always spoke about the importance of European security and joining the European Union. How is that still a big priority for Kyiv?
It's our biggest priority, joining an accession to EU. It's our biggest and the main priority right now. I'm a member of the negotiation team of our country, like representative of our parliament on high level. And every day we have meetings, calls, discussion inside our country. And of course, when the Eurocommission will return from vacation, our process will be very active. We have very huge ambitions to go through this pathway of accession, not in 10 years, not in 20 years, of course, maybe in 5 years and 2, 3, 5 years. Of course, a very important part of our integration to EU, our accession, will be security issue.
Yes.
We understand that for EU, it is start to be very, very sensitive question last years because of this full-scale invasion Russia to Ukraine, but because also about the security situation in the world.
Yeah.
The world is not so calm.
But NATO is also a key point, and Ukraine has always wanted to be a part of NATO. You've said it on many occasions. But see, that crosses that red line as far as Russia is concerned, which is why people like us in India worry that it might result in more violence. How do you balance your security needs with that real worry that it crosses a red line?
We observe. I think your people also observed this fact that after starting a full-scale invasion, NATO became more close to Russia because Finland and Sweden access to NATO. And what Putin wanted, I don't know, but we know result. Yeah? NATO became more unite. NATO became more active. NATO became more helpful for Ukraine, for example, for last year. Of course, I think in a modern actual world, in framework of international law, it's impossible to that one country can't, point to other country what you need to do. You need go to NATO, you don't need go to NATO. What is it about?
Yeah.
It's our choice of our people, of Ukrainians. 88% supported NATO. In 5% in favor, bigger than to EU, for example.
Yes.
That's very interesting. And it will be choice of NATO countries, of their population, of their elites. And I think our level of collaboration with NATO and our level of making some future plans, very, very huge right now and for last years also.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate speaking to us. Well, there you have it, a great sense of anticipation ahead of the visit of the Prime Minister. Will there be any out-of-the-box solutions? Will there be a peace which finally ends in or comes in this country, ending the war? That's what people around the world, certainly people here in Ukraine, want at any cost.
Well, it's time now for us to take a short break. I'll be back tomorrow at 9 p.m. bringing you live updates and discussions and our deep focus on the Ukraine war, what lies ahead. Will the visit of the Prime Minister, which comes up in a couple of days, really make a change over here? Can we even hope to think that that would be the case? A lot of special in-depth reports from Ukraine, a country we've covered very, very closely indeed during the war. But for now, this short break, my colleague Tanima Biswas with a very special discussion on lateral entry into the UPSC process. That's up in the next few minutes.